I'm Jay, and this is Highbrow Theater, a podcast where we analyze theater so you don't have to. Today we have a special guest who was my first onstage kiss ever in this show. Specifically, she's a fashion icon, meme queen, and one of my best friends, Laura Falb. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Jay. What's up?
Nothing. What's up with you? What are you sipping on?
I have a raspberry White Claw in my hand. And I just got back from getting a drink with my girlfriend, so we're feeling good.
A nice vibe going on.
A nice vibe.
Good. Is that what have you been up to?
You know, working at Starbucks, living the absolute dream. I just got promoted, so
that's something. What?
A shift supervisor.
Oh, baby.
I know,
you're
right?
You're going to supervise so hard.
I'm racking the big bucks right now. Yeah. Our experience, our first play together was now like almost 6 years ago.
Ew. That's
gross. Nuts.
It's
disgusting.
Okay. Speaking of, let's talk about how we met. So this was like day two of college ever, and we had auditions, and we got called back for this, and we had to be like really silly because that was the motif of the directors. Specifically, they love doing that.
Ohio State callbacks were always, I appreciate them so much now because they were always fun.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, specifically the One Man, Two Governors callback, like, I didn't get cast, but I just remember thinking, this is so fun.
I don't even remember what happened, because I blocked it out.
It was, like, there was a different stage that you had to go to, like, here's the Commedia dell'arte.
Oh, walking around, yeah.
Yeah, and then here's, like, the blank scene, and then when you had to make a band. Or that might have been senior year. I don't remember. But, yeah. But anyway, I don't remember the callback for Standing on Ceremony.
I want to say it was just like improv games or something, because that's kind of what we did in the show.
Right. I honestly, because I was still like just like blonde, face full of acne, terrified 18-year-old. I literally blocked that from my memory.
My Snackutane.
She was pre-Snackutane.
Okay, I remember. So let's get into the show, which we actually haven't said the name of yet. It's called Standing on Ceremony, the Gay Marriage Plays.
Yes.
So basically, the rundown is there are 9 short scenes written by different playwrights, all centered around something homosexual.
Yes.
It is meant for 6 actors, but there's also a troupe of ushers and also, let's just call it what it is, glorified props.
Exactly.
That we were a part of, and we called it Colors of the Wind Productions.
Colors of the Wind Productions.
And then right before, it was like, can we sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can we paint with all the colors of the wind? Go! Adorable.
And when we were cast in this, it was like, you, me, and then a sophomore, and then like 3 seniors who are clearly, I'll just say it, not that thrilled to be in that position.
I know.
For us, it was absolutely a wild ride.
It was crazy.
It was so like raw theater at Ohio State was like, here is your low budget production that we're going to call like really artsy. No, I love the, like, I'm not trying to throw shade. Like, I really did love the raw theater. I was somehow cast in it like 3 of the 4 seasons. but then it got less raw as the years went on. Like, Dog Act was technically raw theater. That was not raw at all.
Oh yeah. The full productions. Cause like when we did this, it was each of the 9 scenes took place in a different location around the theater building. So there was like a prop, like a bed, a lectern, chairs, just that's it. Like every different spot.
Right. There was like very minimal production elements. Like there was one scene where I had to kind of like dart out quickly because I had to run the light board. But the light board was really for like a string of LED lights in a circle. So, like, it's still, even though there was, like, some elements, it was still pretty, you know, bare bones when it comes to...
Yeah. Her. Just, like, some stage lights glued onto a pillar. Mm-hmm. So, like... We were saying there was an improv troupe, and we were two characters in it, mm-hmm. and we were Peter and Becca, which, yes. That's so cute. I miss us.
I miss us so much. We were two gays posing as, I think we were in our little group, the only queer people.
Yes.
And like, we were the straight couple.
We were the only straight couple. It was like they were trying to, for today's maxi challenge.
And I was at the time, I just didn't know it, but, well, I mean, yeah. wait. I was.
Well, I think it was you kissing me made you gay. Actually.
Yeah, that's right.
My first onstage kiss was the show, and that's it was with you.
Aww. Oh, we were so cute. I remember that day when, so there were six of us. So we were in this group, because so there was like the cast proper. So like the six people that actually got cast in like the roles in the show. And then since OSU likes to, you know, push the boundaries and such, we had six of us in this like immersive ensemble is what it was called. So we were like pretending like all of this was for two of the characters in the show's wedding. So we had to like usher all the guests, aka the audience, from like spot to spot as if it was like all a performance leading up to their wedding day. So very conceptual.
So meta.
So meta.
It was like, you guys are an audience, but also two guests of this fake wedding with a real party. Like,
yeah, there was like real cupcakes at the end, and like, we had to go to people who had no idea what the hell was going on and be like, so what, how do you know Pablo and Andrew? Are you here for Pablo and Andrew's wedding?
And we got to, and we had like acting exercises where they were like, they just present you like, so tell me about your friend Diane. And it was, you just had to make something up right then. And it was so frightening.
It was. And then people would just like, say stuff, and like little 18-year-old me was just like, haha, I don't know, let me just stand with my boyfriend and like, god.
Okay, so we're going to get into the show right now. I'm going to explain the way this section is going to go is we're going to give a quick breakdown of what happens in each scene, talk about our favorite moments, and then we're going to say our favorite line from the scene, because there are some iconic ones that we still say to this day.
Still say to this day.
So the first one is called The Revision, and it's by Jordan Harrison. And the intro stage directions are, the suggestion of a lavish hotel room. Wallace sits on the bed, surrounded by torn and crumpled pages. False starts. Nate stands. Two tuxedos hang on the door. And it's basically, there's two homos on their wedding eve, and Nate is writing his vows that he just can't seem to get right. Mm-hmm. And he and Wallace try to perfect them, but it only gets worse. And that's the comedy of it, is the snowball.
I think it's, if I'm being honest, I think it's kind of a weak start to the show.
Yes, like it is.
I feel like even when we were in the middle of it, it was kind of that one. Like, I think not to skip ahead, but the next scene, I think, would have been a better start. But I think it just, like, it doesn't have enough meat to it to really, like, set the tone for the show.
Mm-hmm. Like, all of them, well, I guess not all of them at all, but all of them had emotional extremes.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was either hilarious or it's ripping your heart in half.
Right.
And this one's just like light chuckles.
Right, exactly. And we, when we did it, it was like just a bed. I think that was the only set, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was intimate. I mean, the whole, like, the way that we had it staged, just the nature of it provided it to be, like, very intimate. But other than that, it was just kind of like...
Yeah. I wonder if it was like... Oh, also, forgot to mention this. Big point. This was originally chosen to be kind of a commentary on how same-sex marriage wasn't legal still. Mm. But then the summer before, it got legalized.
Right.
So then it kind of turned into a celebration of that, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, yeah. That was 2015. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
And they had picked it before that. So, yeah. Like, they didn't know.
Can you believe that, like, literally right before we did this show, gay marriage would just became legal?
I know. That's
wild. That is so wild.
Well, my favorite line from this scene is, I started out with like a Buddhist flavoring, but then I wasn't sure about, you know, this being a proper Georgia wedding. And then the stage direction says, no Southern accents, please. I'm like, I wonder why can't you have a Southern accent in this?
I know, like, there's already not a whole lot going on. I'm skimming through the script right now, and for some reason, was Chauncey Wallace?
Yes.
I'm just reading the line, they're not Freemasons, they work at Goldman Sachs. What is that line? It's in my head.
Oh my god. Oh my god, I remember that. I can hear him saying every single one of these lines.
Literally every role that he ever had at Ohio State, I remember it. Oh, okay, I have a line.
Okay.
So, yeah, just to, like, add to the commentary of, like, oh, yeah, this was literally before it was legal. I also remember this in my head. Take you, Nathan Philip Prissy, to be my lawfully civil unioned or domestic partnered partner. Like, damn.
Yeah, that's how it was. Like, that's crazy. People and really...
asses were just like...
Yeah, exactly. Knowing nothing about anything.
Oh yeah, but then they kiss at the end and it's like, yay.
Yeah. Oh great. Homophobia. Okay. Mm. Number two, the second scene, is called The Flight Tonight by Wendy McLeod. And it starts out. Allie and Hannah, two attractive women, sit in an airport bar at LAX. Their table is covered with the debris of pretzel bags and Allie's several martinis. Their carry-ons are in a pile around them. They hear a boarding announcement for a flight to Des Moines, and Hannah starts to gather her things. I just want to say that any time there's a woman described in this show, it says she's pretty or attractive.
Like
everyone.
As opposed to what? I don't know. Like,
I know. Like, this ugly, raggedy bitch is sitting at the airport bar.
If we're gonna have lesbians in the show, they have to be hot. Like, yeah. It was Natalie Ferris, and why is she blanking in my brain?
Michaela Burke?
No, not Michaela. The other girl in this scene.
What? Oh, Amanda. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, no, I remember... I'll tell you why I thought it was Michaela in a second. We didn't even act in the scenes. I forgot about that. Okay. So the background of this is they're in California, LAX, and there was a law called Proposition 8, which made it illegal for gay marriage in the state of California. So they are traveling to Des Moines to get married, and Allie is hesitant to do so. And that's kind of the whole... hilarity of the scene is like, I want to go. Well, I don't. Iowa stinks. Like that kind of thing.
I think it's like, this one was like very impactful to me. And I wonder why, as a lesbian who didn't know it yet. But I thought it was just like the way that they did it. It was very intimate and very like, it felt much more like a real snapshot of life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It felt much more like natural, I guess.
Like, we were at an airport, but, like, these were the only two people at the airport.
Right, right, exactly.
So, this is why I thought it was Michaela, because my favorite line was, in Santa Monica, they sell those lilies that totally look like vulvas. like the part of the vagina. But Michaela thought the whole time that they said Volvos, like the car.
She did not.
Yes, she's like, these lilies that totally look like Volvos.
Michaela. Oh no.
That's why I thought that she was in it.
Oh no.
Oh my god.
Who was who again?
Amanda Hug and Kiss? No.
I don't know.
I think whoever says lilies that totally look like, oh, Natalie was Allie. Amanda was Hannah.
You're right. I like the church in West Hollywood has like an entire gay choir. Everybody has a gay choir.
The insert city gay men's chorus. It's a staple.
It's a staple. Wait, I remember this. Okay, no, we don't have vibey churches in Iowa. I feel like that's very like a 2021 thing to say.
It's ahead of its time.
It was ahead of its time. I will say, okay, now that I'm looking at this, I wonder if Wendy McLeod was or is queer. Because some of this sounds a little, like, from a lesbian's perspective, like, this woman was looking at us. Which woman? The cute one. The one who patted us down. Oh, my God, it was the uniform. It was not. I know you have a thing for women in uniform. It was the goosebumps. I got goosebumps when she touched me. It was the first time I had been touched by another woman in a really long time.
And also, those lesbian gals love the power tools.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say. Some lesbians do love power tools. You know what lesbians love? Staying home. We're homebodies. Like,
she went to Kenyon.
No. Okay, yeah. So, like, me, like, straight me when I was 18 was like, aw. But, like, now me, like, has been an out lesbian for a while now, like, looking at this a little differently. But it still does feel pretty, like, natural for the most part.
Yeah.
You're wondering if she's gay. She probably just watched 5 episodes of The L Word and was like, oh, cool.
Right, exactly.
That one. All right. Number 3 was called The Gay Agenda, and it's by Paul Rudd. This one? Okay. So, lights up on Mary Abigail Carstairs Sweetbuckle, an outgoing, oddly innocent, well-meaning woman dressed in something pretty but comfortable with well-chosen accessories. She's from a small town in Ohio, but she enjoys public speaking. So, the breakdown, Mary Abigail, she's a homemaker. And she's like the I'm not racist, I have a black friend type of person.
Exactly.
And she's publicly speaking about the gay agenda taking over and how straight marriage is going to crumble. Okay. And there's a lot of microaggressions in there, and it's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
This one, shout out.
Iconic.
Shout out to Hannah Halashak for the most iconic performance of this. It's like a 3-page monologue, and it is just so good. This is, amazing. In my opinion, the standout piece from this whole play.
Yes.
It is that funny. Like, literally so much opportunity to play with the audience, and, like, it just so good.
This isn't my favorite line, but I just want to read this. I am a proud member of the organizations focused on the family, family first, save the family, defend the family, moms and dads are miracles, the Christian Family Foundation, the Christian Family Network, the Christian Family Fortress, the traditional family Delta Force, the Aryan Family Freedom Fighters, and fuck with the family and you die. Like, that's kind of like, that's the vibe of what's going on. And it was so hard not to lose my mind every time.
God, I know. I literally lost it. This is for sure the one that you and I quote the most.
The most. What did we say? The recording Shrekretary at our Board of Education.
Oh! My God. Gay people are everywhere. Almost every TV show now has at least one sympathetic, outrageously flamboyant gay character. Glee, Modern Family? Any morning show with a weatherman?
And then something, there's something about a sassy gay friend in movies. And then she went, they're taking jobs away from Black women. And then she pointed to a Black woman in the audience every time.
So it was awful, but it was just so good.
One more. I
mean, Chinese, because their wonderful children made my jacket.
Look how happy Gary is. He can't wait to have a big anal three-way with those two hot studs. And then I said it right out loud. I said, my husband does not want to have anal sex. It's so well written.
Where she goes, this? What is that?
It was the picture on the wall of like some old dude.
I'm trying to find the line where it's like.
Was that was that written in there? I don't think that was written in there.
No, I don't think it is.
Because, like, how would they say point to something on the wall? Like, mm-hmm. And then didn't one day she go to the Mime Brutus or something?
Yeah. Okay,
that one was a whole giggle of a time.
It really was. And it was that was the moment when I was just like, I'm really excited to be a student here.
Right, right.
Like, we can do stuff like this. It's so good. But yeah, it's an absolute classic.
So number four was called On Facebook by Doug Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Bob steps into the light. He's an affable soul with a pleasing face. And the rundown is it's a Facebook argument read aloud where people... We were being props and shined flashlights on them as they talked. And we had to type on, we were ASMRing and typing on keyboards as they talked.
Oh,
as if they were typing them.
I feel like I had a xylophone too.
Oh, for like the log on, ding.
Yeah.
Or like comment posted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this one was really meta because it was like all these people just standing, not looking at each other, but like having, as if they were having a Facebook argument. So it would be followed with things like comment or send post or whatever.
Yeah. And likes this. There was, Michaela was in this one because she played Fran.
Right, the old lady.
Fran was like an 80-year-old lady. She was like,
I think mean.
What button do I push? Share? Do I press share?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was being devil's advocate.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole time. It was really fun.
Yeah, I remember this one, I think, also was not as strong as some of the others because it was a little 40-year-old trying to write millennials, you know?
Yes.
Just
very obvious.
Yeah, it's a little, I think it doesn't, like, stand the test of time the way that, like, you know, just in the same way that if somebody were to write something about TikTok now, it would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you pushed that, it would not hold up, probably.
So my favorite line was when they said, they were talking about the movie of their life or something, and they said, cast someone skinny. But I also want to tell a story.
Okay.
About this, because that's real.
I feel like script-wise, this one was pretty weak, but I will say, like, effect-wise, I think it was good, especially the way that it was staged. It was kind of like, it was in the same place that Gay Agenda had just happened. So it was kind of a cool transition, because it was like, everybody was standing on these blocks, like, around the audience. So they all kind of, like, you know, people's heads were turning, and I thought that was, like, effective, at least, even if the, like, text itself was
like that.
Yeah.
They did the best they could.
I was gonna say, I had to dip out early for this one, because that's when I had to go downstairs to do the light board.
Right.
So I never quite caught the end of this one. I had a scenes tidbit. Okay, so I would always cut out a little extra early and use this time to pee. there was that bathroom downstairs, so I would like pee real fast, hear the laughter from the end of the scene, and then like butt out of there.
Going downstairs, number five is Strange Fruit by Neil LaBute. this was our first more serious scene in this.
Yeah.
So it is silence, darkness, a man, Tom, standing in a bright light, wearing a tux. He talks to us. Another man, Jerry, in a tux, standing next to him, smiling. So the premise of what's going on here is the two are talking to the audience and sometimes each other, reminiscing about memories and good moments they had. But as the scene progresses, we find out that Tom was killed in a hate crime very soon after they got married. And it was so sad. Like, he was talking about, these college boys were coming up to me and they were yelling at me, but I was so happy that it just sounded like birds singing.
Yeah.
I was like, ouch.
God, this one was intense. I was almost happy that I ran the light board for this one because it was like, it was crazy. And then there was another layer because Amanda played Jerry. And so they were kind of playing into like, he was a trans man, I think.
Yeah, there was a line where they said, my husband, wife, whatever I call them now.
Yeah. So very interesting. It wasn't explicitly stated too in the casting, I don't think. I think that was like a directional choice, which I thought added another layer to it.
To lighten this up a little bit, the very first line in the scene is, I love cock. I do. I'm really just sort of into it, you know? Cock.
It's so good. I literally remember every single time the audience, like, there was just like this flush of like uncomfortable faces, like, where am I right now?
Right.
I remember specifically, I don't remember the context of it, but it was like, yeah, I remember like reading the Hardy Boys and getting a boner.
Oh yes.
I don't know why that line like stands out.
It started as such, like, silliness, and then it descended so quickly.
So quickly, yeah.
Oh, that one was I think it made it even worse. We were in the basement of the theater building. It was completely dark, except the lights on these two people. I was like,
yeah, this is the only one, because then the lights came up for the next scene. So I feel like, I thought the staging for this one was the most, like, complex.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, kudos to both of those actors, too, because that was, like, nuts. It was kind of an odd pairing, but it, like, somehow worked.
Yeah, it was the weirdest of the group.
Yes, for sure.
So, number six is A Traditional Wedding by Mo Gaffney. The stage directions are limited. Let me, again, Liz, early 40s, pretty.
For me.
Kate. Late 30s, same.
Why am I not remembering this one?
Okay, here's the thing. I didn't remember it either. I couldn't tell you who was who.
It was Hannah Halashek and Brian playing a trans woman.
Oh my God, he was in the dress and the wig.
Yeah, and it was in the same circle that Strange Fruit happened in.
Yeah, they were just, like, crossing paths, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's all coming.
Okay. Yeah. I think one of the main points was Kate's father, in the beginning, she's describing how he was so mean and nasty and terrible to her and kicked her out and all that stuff. And then he realized that he didn't have his child in his life, and he attended their wedding and cried.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a nice heartwarming moment.
Yeah.
She was talking about making out with somebody. That's when her dad caught her was making out with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he thought gay was catching and I'd give it to my sister, who it turned out was a huge cokehead and a slut. Oh my God. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, it was okay, but clearly not that memorable. This next one, though, I do remember.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's called My Husband by Paul Rudnick, which I believe we mentioned him earlier. He was the Gay Agenda, so he's really good at these.
Yes.
Time, 3 p.m. Place, the Upper East Side living room of Gabrielle Finkelstein. The front door opens and Michael Finkelstein runs in, frantic. Michael is nice looking, in jeans and a sport jacket. He's a dedicated New York public school teacher. So what is happening in this scene is Gabrielle is the kind of mother who is really, really, really into having a gay son, who is Michael. And the day, like a couple hours after gay marriage gets passed, she's like, Michael, why aren't you married? Like, now's the time. And he's like been single. And then she tries to set him up with every, like, that, oh, I know this one other gay person. You'd be perfect together. Like, yes, that's not how that works.
That.
And then there's a big wedding planning section also.
Yes.
It's so fucking funny.
She's very into, like, getting the wedding as theatrical as possible because she thinks that's what her gay son would have.
There was this part where she was talking about some, like, there were 57, like, doves and a priest coming in a flaming chariot. And they were like, who planned that? Julie Taymor.
Julie Taymor, I was just going to say.
Oh, my God.
This one was fun, too, because it was set up in, like, a classroom kind of setting. So the audience was, like, sitting in, like, school desk chairs.
They were.
So it's like they're in the class, just like observing this awkward conversation. So it was really good.
And there was one line where his mom was like, I mean, fine, you're gay, but it's not enough. Not anymore.
She was at the club right now. She would be the mom that's like, yas, queen.
Oh my God. Like on her fifth vodka soda. Like on the stage, like, that's my gay son.
Like, honey, can you get me another Tito's and soda? Oh, he's darling.
Isn't he? He's also really responsible and picks up after him. Like, he tries to set him up.
Oh, God.
Okay. This next one, number 8, is called London Mosquitoes by Moises Kaufman.
The most iconic one in the whole show.
It was very iconic, but also very somber, so it was hard to be, like, excited about it. So, the stage directions, time and place, 2010, here. Joe, dressed in mourning, with a U, and he's wearing a yarmulke. So, Joe is giving a eulogy for his husband, Paul, going through their lives together, all that stuff. Paul wanted to get married, but Joe did not. They were together for 40-plus years, and Joe thought that getting married would invalidate everything that they've been through.
Mm.
But we kind of memed it.
It was such a meme because, so this was like toward the end of the show. And like, it's very well written, but it's literally like 10 plus minutes long of just one guy giving a monologue. Like,
we had to hear it like 26 times.
26 times, and there's so many, like, it's not like a laugh riot, like in the way that like Gay Agenda is like a 4-page long monologue. This is like longer and not funny. So it's just like you're just sitting there like depressed and hating your life like you would it like in an actual funeral, you know?
Yeah, for like someone you didn't know, but exactly. you're like second great aunt.
I'm like literally at the beginning, he is like talking logistics. Like he's literally like, parking will be at the North Gate.
Before I begin, Rabbi Simitz has asked me to tell you the bus will be departing from the North Gate.
Like, why do we need to know that? Why is that important for the like theatricality of this scene? Like it just the whole thing.
He did it outside, which, like, standing on, like, asphalt while everyone was sinking in their chairs in the grass. And, like, we had to hold black umbrellas.
Yeah, all of us in the, like, the immersive ensemble are all holding these black umbrellas, like, just standing outside for 10 minutes. And I'm like, 99% sure you and I were standing next to each other just trying not to laugh the whole time.
Every time, because there was one line that we said a lot that was, we as a species have ceased to evolve.
God, and he's talking about like the London mosquito. Well, I mean, obviously, the scene is called London Mosquitoes, but he's talking about like in the London, like, subway system and all the mosquitoes, like, all this scientific information that we just don't need. It is so unnecessary. I just don't know where, like, Moises Kaufman, I would love to know what your thought process was for, like, this as a piece in the show. But honestly, like, good for the memes. Good for the memes. And I feel like maybe the old gays would appreciate it, because he talks a lot about, like, meeting his Paul in college and everything, and but
still. I just, he wrote and directed the Laramie Project movie.
With this guy?
Yes.
Oh my god. He's like, let me just make my career off of making sad gay shit.
That's what I wanted to.
I know, right?
Very profitable market.
Right.
And finally, we come to the conclusion, which was called Pablo and Andrew at the Altar of Words by Jose Rivera. Mm-hmm. A wedding chapel, two men, Pablo and Andrew, face each other. A priest stands upstage of them. Pablo turns to the audience slash congregation. So also, that makes me, like, the audience also had roles in this.
Yeah.
Like, they were the audience in the show for Mary Abigail and also watching a piece of theater.
Right.
So it's kind of a simple ending, you know, a gay marriage. They run through their past memories and recite their vows, but it's different than the first scene. And we, for some reason, were also getting married. Like, the pairings of the immersive ensemble were getting married at the same time. That's right. Why we had to kiss.
Yeah, it was interesting choice, especially because it was like, because I think because you and I were playing, because we were the only straight people in the whole group, so it was kind of like, why are we doing this? Like, you
know,
you and I could have just as easily been like the flower girl and ring bearer or something. Like, why did we need to get married? Like, our teenage straight asses did not need to be included in this. But
the whole thing.
Right. I mean, it's fun.
The, like, we had to say their vows all with, like,
yes,
the immersive ensemble said the vows with Pablo and Andrew.
Yes.
And there was one part that we could not get down for so long. And it was like, I will lie with you in the quiet, earthy, wormy, deep, silent, cozy, encompassing, ravaging, and utterly nesting little bed of our final rest.
It was so much, and it was like, for what? Like, this is why people are homophobic, because the gays are so extra. I'm just kidding.
I know. Just, like, smooch and get out of there. Go on to your Spencer's gift store, wherever you honeymoon.
Like, if I went to, like, my own gay wedding, and we said those kind of vows, I'd be like, God, yawn. And then, so, I mean, it's a nice, like, kind of button to the end of the show, but, and, like, you know, Jose Rivera, very, like, poetic and, you know, but I thought it was a little hokey, especially after we'd just been through the, like, emotional trauma of London mosquitoes. It's like, now we gotta sit in, like, a wedding. I don't know.
Exactly. Is a legit wedding reception afterwards. Yes. Where there was, like, a DJ and, like, lights flashing and a dance floor that they built.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to, like, go around, pass out cupcakes and champagne, which was just apple juice. And it was, I took a lot of those cupcakes home.
Oh, yeah. But they have, like, they were, like, literally, like, Kroger, like, blue and green cupcakes. And then I remember they still had some at rehearsal for the next show we were in. They're like, oh, here's the standing on ceremony cupcakes.
Because when this it was the same year or like the same semester.
And we were like, it was so weird because we're just like, did you ever even eat a cupcake like after a show? I feel like I never did.
Oh, yeah, I did. And drank an apple juice flute. Oh, that's
because we all did like a toast, right? And they had like a live.
Yeah. That's so wild.
It was wild. It was a fun time. I feel like people enjoyed it, but it was definitely, I think without, like, had this been done in, like, a black box kind of scenario, I think it would have been, like, wow, I'm so bored with, like, the whole thing. But I think the way that it was done, the way that it was staged, definitely, like, at least made it, you know, nice.
Bearable.
Bearable.
No, just kidding. Do you have any memories associated with it that weren't specific to being in the show? Because I do, and I'm going to talk about it.
I do, too. I think I am thinking of, like, the same one that you are. But, so we, particularly, especially as freshmen, it was very exciting to be just kind of, like, in with the gang with all the, like, seniors and everything. And so we would play, these, like, improv games pre-show. And there was one where we would just, well, first of all, there was one that I really liked, which was, like, the categories one. So you'd say, like, the category would be, like, colors, and I'd be, like, blue, and then we'd have to, like, go in order or whatever. But there was a time when, like, the category was, like, cuss words. I'll let you take it away, because you probably have a better explanation of it.
Okay. So what happens is, hang on. Okay, I need to focus. What happens is there's a category and everyone has to pick a word that fits in that category. Like if you did animals, it'd be like Laura would start and it'd be like cheetah. And then I would start and then I'd say, you know, a mammoth. And then other people would go. And then we had to remember who was giving theirs to us.
Right.
And who we passed it to. So Laura would look at me and say, would you say mine or yours?
I think yours.
You'd say mine, yeah. You'd look at me and say mammoth, and I'd look to the person over there and say seagull. But what what the category was cuss words. And then for some reason, like, we were doing that, and we just screamed them so loud. I could not tell you why.
It kept getting progressively louder, too.
The warm-up room that we were in was near a public space.
Yeah.
Like, where people just walk normally. And then our stage manager comes in and was like, hey, guys, people can hear you swearing out there. So can you not do that?
Well, because it like, ran out of cuss words by the time. So, like, somebody was like, cunt. And we're just, like, screaming this, like, in the lobby of the Drake.
Oh my god, I'm gonna pee my pants.
I just remember, like, a lot of our rehearsals were spent, like, in this tiny little classroom, and I was just, like, terrified of everyone and everything, and we're just, like, having to do these improv games, and I'm just like, oh god, like, what am I doing? And then I was like, because, like, we were starting, like, we became friends then, but then we really became good friends when it was, like, finally we were able to kind of, like, air out all of our grievances about the show and, like, everything in, like, the next show that we did together.
Because we were, if the show was 2 hours long, we were backstage for an hour and 59 minutes of it.
My girlfriend actually saw that show. It was like one of them. She saw.
Is it the Dirty Water one?
She says the Dirty Water one.
Yes, it is the Dirty Water one.
I have no idea what was going on.
We didn't either.
Can we talk about the fact that you and I had lines and the people that, like, accidentally auditioned didn't even get lines?
I know, they asked us to be in it. They asked us to be in it, like, because they needed people for this idea they had, and they went up to the, there were three of us who took it and was like, yeah, sure, we'll do it. People, we just got asked to be in a show and given lines. It's like hundreds of people auditioned and they didn't get me.
Oh god, what a mess.
That was bricked. Oh, I don't even know what we were doing. I wasn't fully aware.
I wasn't either, because I never saw the show, so I didn't even know. Like, I never read the script. I never knew. Like, if that doesn't say, like, freshman in this theater program, I don't know what else does.
Why did we get to bow?
Why did they even let us bow? That was so stupid. I pray to God we didn't bow alone. I don't think we did.
Oh my God. No, no, no. We went up with everyone. Okay. And I remember it was like the sound of a paper slicer. And then it went dark. And then it was like, go, 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 go.
Oh God.
That's they so built dumb.
That, they built that beautiful set for that horrible play. Oh my God.
And like there was also a kind of immersive ensemble in that of townspeople who were like getting mad at the water situation, but they had to sit in the audience every time and see this like 2.5 hour dry show.
Yeah.
But and they did it every night, and we were backstage like fricking around and like
yeah on our laptops talking to each other via like Google
shit the whole time.
Wait, okay, really quick. Can I take a quick pee break? I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Yes.
Okay. Stand by.
2 hours later.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh. I guess this is a good place to end. So.
I figured. I was like, it's coming soon, but I don't know how much longer I could last.
I very much understand that. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. Laura? I don't know if you can hear, but I'm clapping. Thank you so much for joining. It was a hoot and 2.5. It was a hoot and a half.
2.5s.
Yeah, double it. Where can people find you online if you want them to?
Sure. I am online at Laura Faulb on everything. That is Faulb with a long A, F-A-L-B. And if you're feeling up to it and you're queer like myself, follow Ashley Gavin and We're Having Gay Sex podcast in addition to Highbrow Theater.
Hey, plug what you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
Live your life. Get your coins. If you would like to keep up with Highbrow Theater, you can follow us on Twitter at Highbrow Theater. There's some informational stuff and stupid stuff on there. We also have a Patreon. If you search Patreon and Highbrow Theater, you will be able to see the wonderful, fun things that happen. And yeah, I think that's it. Thanks again, Laura. Bye-bye.
Bye.